But in reality, we do just like chat shit for a while, right? In the beginning.
That's what we always did, right? We always chatted a little bit of shit. I mean, quite a lot of shit.
It's the entirety of the podcast. There's nothing else.
Well, we're back.
Hello and welcome to Butterflies on the Wheel, where life's array of unsung bastards are finally held accountable for their actions. Each week, two of us will battle it out by presenting a real-life person they've encountered who has been guilty of some form of mild twatishness.
Yours is shithousery.
Oh yeah, mine is shithousery, I forgot. Yeah, yeah. Hello and welcome to Butterflies on the Wheel, where life's array of unsung bastards are finally held accountable for their actions. Each week, two of us will battle it out by presenting a real-life person they've encountered who has been guilty of some form of mild... who's been guilty of some form of mild shithousery.
It's like we've never left, baby. It's like we've never left.
Just like riding a bike.
Each week, two of us will battle it out by presenting a real-life person they've encountered who has been guilty of some form of mild shithousery. They will conclude by proposing a fitting punishment to the moderator. This week, that's me. The
judge
will then decide who has presented the most convincing case, and the winner will have the right to compete again in next week's podcast. The offences we report here are all the more criminal because they are not recognised as crimes. But that stops with us.
That's just, it's giving me chills, literal chills. That could be to do with the alcohol poisoning.
It's good. You know what? No, it's good writing. It's good.
It's good writing. It's good. My name is Raghu Keshavan, and I'm joined by two experts in the field of getting irrationally upset at the actions of those around them. Jack Gardner and Sebastian Hendra.
Hi, honey.
Greetings.
Jesus.
Wow, well, we finally buckled to the public pressure.
when you have tens and tens of people screaming down your neck to return to the public, you listen. You listen.
Up to four people on a single day came up to me and said that we needed to bring the podcast back.
Wow.
It was your wedding day, Jack, so maybe they were just being nice.
It must have been 3 or 4 years since we did the last one. We recorded
Is it really?
No, 2 years. There's the lost episode.
There is the lost episode. So in one of the big lockdowns, we got together and we said, you know what the world really needs to heal is a Butterflies in the World podcast. And I was really excited to do it. Gathered everyone together in my bed with my duvet over my head to make sure that I had the best sound I could possibly get. And we really worked hard on it. We recorded 2 episodes and then I gave up on the idea of it. I didn't edit it because I was like, I suppose, kind of depressed in the same way that everyone was. And I just didn't want to do it.
And you've been working on that song ever since.
It was lockdown, baby. Nobody did any of the shit that they'd planned to do.
Yeah. It was like as soon as a day went past when I didn't do it, it was just no fucking chance it was going to happen.
It was the era of unfinished projects.
Now it's the year of monkeypox.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Yeah, that's hectic.
Yeah, I saw one of the most harrowing images I've ever seen of an illness in my life. This guy that I was having sex with, he was like, my friend has monkeypox, and I was like, okay, you probably should have alerted me to that. And he then shows me this picture of this guy's anus, which is riddled with like octopus sucker pustules.
Oh,
like,
my fucking god. Trigger warning. Like, we needed a trigger warning, and now everybody who's gonna listen to this needs a fucking trigger warning.
Okay, TW, monkeypox. They were the
an octopus anus. Right, let's get this show on the road.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Good God. Oh, and there's a new jingle. I think this is the jingle. What was the first jingle I did?
There's been a minor transgression. Incredibly minor. A social-based indiscretion. Slightly embarrassing. A crime that needs no confession. Nonetheless. This court is in session.
I like that. Transgression session. Very good.
But do you want to react to my jingle as if you just heard it for the first time?
So you just want us to tell you that we love your jingle at this stage?
I mean, I do love your jingle, so...
Yeah.
I do also love the jingle. I like the 80s vibe.
Yeah, it's good. But that's about as much enthusiasm as I can summon up after being told to be enthusiastic, so...
It's about as much enthusiasm as it's worth.
All right, should we go over the rules again?
Yes.
So The rules are simple. 1, no more than 3 minutes for opening arguments. 2, the crime must be trivial. Leave the Trumps and Weinsteins to, oh wait, we need new guys for this.
Yeah, that was our first ever one that we did. We Trump Weinstein. How the world has changed.
How the world has changed. I mean, Trump is a criminal again, recently.
True.
Yeah.
And Weinstein remains a criminal.
Weinstein remains a criminal.
I feel we need someone other than Weinstein. The creators of the COVID-19 virus.
Yeah, the Jewish lab assistants. Who...
Oh my God. That's staying in.
2, the crime must be trivial. Leave the Trumps and Putins to the actual courts and the big guy upstairs. And 3, the punishment must fit the crime.
Thank you, Judge. Also, why do you call yourself the moderator in the intro?
Yeah, I think it's
a fully invested judge.
I think it's an old draft.
Old copy.
Yeah.
But if you could just say the word judge, I will I'll edit it.
Badly.
And then people will be really confused as to why it's really bad, and then they'll listen to this bit and be like, oh, wait, I see. Or you know what? Fuck it, I'll do it. Judge. There you go. Yeah, that's what we need.
That'll be good. So now we know the rules. I think what we used to do at this stage is toss some kind of coin to...
Oh my God, yes. The toin cost.
The toin cost.
It's all coming back to me.
Let's see, what can we... I've got a little tin of Vaseline.
Okay. Clearly your masturbation station right here. No, just kidding. Do not masturbate with Vaseline.
It's lip balm. And yeah, who would do that? Are you insane?
It's thick. Too thick.
Wouldn't that not be fine? I've always imagined that would be okay. Not that, like, you know, but, like, what's wrong with it? Say someone had theoretically done it every day for the last 15 years.
Your poor, withered foreskin.
So there's the top bit which says Vaseline, and then the bottom bit which has a barcode on it.
I'll take the top because you think I'm a top.
Oh, I think... Is it you're deciding? Is that you're calling it? Why is that then?
Well, I think it's appropriate because Sebastian.
I don't have to answer to you. You're not the judge.
Well, Sebastian,
because I'm a bottom.
Sebastian is a top and you're a bottom. I think it just makes sense.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah,
it's
actually just nature's law.
All right, hang on. I'm gonna toss this. Landed top side up.
There we go.
So Sebastian,
there we go, baby.
You get to decide. Whether you go first or second. I can guess which way this is going to go.
You know what? No, I'm gonna switch it up. I want Jack to go first. I want Jack to pleasure himself for my entertainment first.
Yeah, well, that basically means Bash still needs to finish writing.
No, I've, as usual, written far too much. And you will listen to all of it.
Jack Gardner, the... Is the floor yours? Is that what they say in court?
The floor is mine.
Been judged.
Approach the bench.
Approach the bench and do your thing.
The esteemed jury will recognize that growing old is the worst thing in the world, and I hate it, I hate it, I hate it. I'm not growing wiser. In fact, I'm convinced I'm getting dumber. The other day, I had to pause a conversation I was having with a friend for 2 full awkward minutes before remembering the word discreet. If I try to go for a run without stretching for 45 minutes before setting off, every tendon in my being snaps as if it were made out of fortune cookie. But the worst thing? The worst thing is that my looks are fading. And for someone like me, who has no other discernible positive characteristics other than my significantly above average attractiveness levels, this is a serious problem. No more so than with the thinning of my once luscious hair.
Nobody noticed.
Nobody noticed what?
That your hair is thinning.
But now I do see it now. I see it now.
Yeah. No, you don't. No, you don't. No, you don't.
Now that you say it, I can.
No.
There is a wispiness.
Yeah. Is that what this whole tuft in the front is meant to disguise?
I would respect the jury if they shut the fuck up. Recently, in response to my increasingly inventive hairline, I bleached it blonde. Now, the jury may be thinking, if you are concerned in any way about your thinning hairline, wouldn't it be a terrible idea to directly apply chemicals onto it? Chemicals strong enough to turn, say, nearly black hair white. Wouldn't that be like trying to deal with your concerns surrounding the dwindling panda population by conducting seminars on amateur bear castration? And while I commend the erstwhile jury for their erstwhile comments, I would just like to point out that clearly none of them are young enough to understand the fashion of my generation. You see, Your Honours, I may be growing older, but I remain sensationally young, comparatively speaking. That is why I did this, to prove how young I am. Because only a young person would be able to pull off this sensational follicle stunt of hair dyeing and live to tell the tale. But anyway, I don't wish to belabour the point about how young I am. Suffice to say that I very rarely use the word belabour in that context that I just used it in, preferring instead more age-appropriate phrases such as jam on the same...
He couldn't even say it.
Preferring instead more age-appropriate phrases such as jam on the same vibe or hammer down on the point style. I... This is the dumbest thing I've ever written in my entire life.
That's real words. Oh, you're on mute, Sebastian.
Oh, sorry. I said something incredibly funny, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that is a fucking boomer moment right there.
there are like 16 trucks having a party outside of my window. So I thought, out of courtesy to Jack, I would prevent them from infringing upon his whatever.
I heard the trucks going off at the very start, and in my head I was just like, "Don't let that derail you, Jack."
They're like practicing they're like practicing Christmas caroling. These trucks, like, it's fucking crazy.
What was the phrase? Jam down on the vibe.
Jam on the same vibe. Hammer jam, down on the point style. Jam. Look it up, granddad. After seeking the permission of my 20-something-year-old wife, I got one of my similarly aged friends to hoverboard their way to me during a gap in their schedule of TikToking and therapy, whereupon they applied the bleach. All told, I was pretty pleased with how my hair turned out, which was more than can be said for my parents, who genuinely ignored my texts for 2 weeks, despite the fact I am a fully grown independent adult who is nearly years old. But my parents' disappointment towards my life's endeavours is not the trivial crime I present before the court today, which is lucky, because if parental disappointment was suitable for this podcast, there would be enough material to carpet the fucking moon. The trivial crime is this. I put a photo of my new hairstyle on Instagram, because as we all know, no action we take in the physical world is completed unless evidence is offered up to our social media overlords. All hail Silicon Valley. What was I expecting? Not much. Maybe a few fire emojis. A simple sick man from a long-lost friend. An ex-girlfriend to get in touch to say it was the biggest mistake of her life to let me slip through her fingers. A topless selfie from a particularly sexy relative. What I was not expecting was an avalanche of people writing to me with messages that included terminology such as, "What the fuck have you done?" and, "Oh no, Jack." How bad was the abuse I received? Let me just say this. I received the monkey covering the eyes emoji on nearly two occasions. One person replied to me saying, "I had to show your photo to my partner to prove to them how stupid you looked." And if you're listening to this and think that that person is you, don't worry, I'm statistically not referring to you, because three people said pretty much the same thing. Now, I can't stand it when white guys say the phrase, "If I said that to a girl, I would be nya nya nya," because it's usually followed by them fabricating an image of society where they are in any way the victim of anything. However, I think it's fair to say that if I had said to a girl that her hair looks shit on Instagram, I would be thrown in jail and beaten until dead, unless I was able to post bail using the excess money I've earned from the gender pay gap. And yet, I am allowed to be told by men, women, and people with the intellect of children that my hair is shit. I ask the jury, how is that fair? And I answer on behalf of the jury that it isn't. Therefore, I rest my case.
Thank you.
Can I just say, for some reason, my favorite joke that I've ever written in my life is, I'm allowed to be told by men, women, and people with the intellect of children. I think that's the funniest fucking thing I've ever said. And I said this story to Rebecca, and I've now said it to you, and it's got nothing, and it's the funniest fucking thing I've ever... People with men, women, and people... Because you think I'm going to say men, women, and children, but I say men, women, and people... It's very
very good.
It was just a pleasant misdirect at best. Like,
yeah, it was nice.
The gender pay gap joke was much funnier.
Okay, thank you.
That said, I do have some commentary for this.
Shut the fuck up. Yeah.
Respect the judge.
Points deducted for saying I rest my case and then immediately interrupting me like less than 4 seconds.
Judge, after but what about
your case?
Judge, what about when I sucked your dick in chambers? Though, does that get
he's
me?
He's talking
any
about
points?
Me.
I'm not talking about you. You fucking idiot.
Oh,
but points deducted.
I didn't suck anyone's dick.
Points deducted for interrupting me while I was going after the opposition. Well done, fucking moron.
I love our time together.
Also, I can't believe you haven't sucked my dick. Anyway.
there is still time.
What I was going to say was that you're very lucky that despite all of your cheap shots about how both Sebastian and I are older than you and that we should in some way be ashamed of this fact, I think you forget that I am immortal and eternally young.
It's true.
I'm still guarded when I go to the Morrisons to buy beer, to the point where I have the ID out and it's in the person's face before they've even asked for it. And I think that there must be lots of people like me, sort of immortal, eternally young geniuses, because I think we have like a certain sort of resigned weariness about this where and experienced sort of service staff at large supermarkets can read that. So now when I pull out my ID, they don't even look at it. They're just like, oh, one of those guys. All right, thank you.
Yeah. One of those immortal geniuses.
Yeah, you're fine.
We get them all the time in Morrisons.
Yeah.
weary and resigned. I feel like that's your personal brand to a degree I didn't understand was possible as a marketer.
Well, I mean, the thing is that weary and resigned is what happens when you're immortal. Because
true.
Anyway, Sebastian, any cross referencing? Cross referencing is not what I mean.
It's not the phrase.
I'll do it anyway. I'll do whatever
cross,
you want me
cross
to.
Cross examining. Yeah, that's cross examine. What's his face?
I have a few thoughts. First and foremost, I know it has been typically my role on this podcast to call out a lack of triviality in a trivial crime. I'd like to call out the criminality of this crime and question whether this is truly a crime. It's truly trivial. Is it a crime? As someone who has famously also dyed their hair blonde during what commentators are calling a gay crisis, I think I learned early on that when you do that insidiously narcissistic act, you are naturally inviting in the criticism of the public. That just comes with it. So I'm not really sure I believe that you have been wronged. I think that you have been engaged with by society. I think you are lucky for the attention that you've received, specifically because you do kind of look like a toilet brush that's been peed on too many times.
Now here we go. Judge, I'm going
to... Sorry, I wrote that down. I wrote that down while you were talking and I just had to say it.
So just to rephrase the learned counsel's colorful language in legal terms, what you're saying, Sebastian, is that Jack's dyeing of his hair, this virulent blonde, was equivalent to an assault on all of our senses. So anybody responding to him was actually acting in self-defense.
So I'm motherfucker.
And in the interest of the state, judge.
Of society, right.
Right. Thank
horrendous.
You.
Noted. Horrendous takes.
Argument registered, I think.
I have been abused on multiple, on one channel, by multiple people. And that is not something that I take lightly. And if clearly I'm in the midst of two abuse venerators and protectors and can someone...
What is it? Keep going. Bail
me out, please.
No, I mean, obviously, cyberbullying is a problem. It is a real crime.
Thank you. That's my point. I just realized cyberbullying.
Right, which is a real crime, not a trivial crime. But anyway, I digress. Yeah. I think that it is kind of sad how virulent the criticism has been of you. I know personally when I was going through, when I was going through my gay crisis, and I revealed my silvery lilac hair, I was met with at least like 200 likes. So I don't know what you got, but that's like, if you are getting if you're getting less than 100 or less than 50 on your dyed hair change, it's probably time to just throw in the towel all around, like life.
That is germane to this conversation. So Jack, could you reveal for the purposes of discovery, how many likes you got on your Instagram post?
I put it on stories because I'm not a thirsty BR.
Oh, you didn't even post to main. Oh my God.
But I'm going to say, yeah, it was coward. It was cowardice. But I'm going to say that I got 1-4 ratio nice to naughty comments.
As in more naughty or more nice?
4 naughty to 1 nice. Ooh. I did get a sick man from someone, which was what I was expecting.
But no ex-girlfriends or topless relatives. I don't know why you went with topless relatives.
Hey, it's whatever floats my boat. It's fine.
One person stopped talking, and the only problem is another person's gonna talk now. We've got to listen to that shit. The time is fast approaching when the second story comes. Will it be better written or equally dumb?
Excellent. So now that we've finished with that, we can move on to our second trivial crime of the day. Mr. Hendra, please approach the bench.
Thank you, Judge. It's great to be back. I'd like to take the listeners back to a place that I'm not sure I've talked enough about on this podcast, which is my house in France. Now, as a child, I used to spend a lot of time in France. And the reason was my dad's sister, Aunt Celia, lived there. And this, she was a very sort of crunchy, granola, hipster British woman who lived with her husband and bought like crumbling castles in the south of France and then renovated them and sold them. And so obviously as a young homosexual, I used to go visit her for very fancy boy getaways where she would teach me all sorts of things like how to bake without flour or dairy or anything resembling a food ingredient, how to identify medicinal plants and flowers, how to cure ear infections by pouring hot oil in your ear. Typical activities for an 8-year-old power bottom living in France. But these trips also taught me to use my imagination because there's not much else to do in a ruined castle. So one day, after playing 6 hours of a Little Mermaid video game on the only PC within a 30-mile radius, I shared one of my biggest dreams with Aunt Celia, which was to swim in the castle's modest swimming pool, just like Her Majesty Princess Ariel, breathing underwater, seashell tit top, green tail and all. Now, Celia was a big DIY proponent, obviously, so she immediately agreed and set to work on my first ever mermaid tail. And I'm absolutely schwitzing for it. I picture the shimmering scales glittering in the southern French sun. I picture powerful strokes hydrodynamically propelling me across the tiny pool. I picture the tail seamlessly flush with the skin of my waistline, form-fitted to the exact dimensions of my tiny body. I picture, in other words, a powerful tool of cross-species experimentation, but also a work of art, a symbol of what man can achieve with a little imagination and a little bravery. What I received instead, after weeks of waiting, was a sad, dull sack of green cotton with 2 pathetically uneven fins limping off the end. Now, this fabric, I believe, was a simple cotton, but it was somehow extremely flimsy and at the same time rigidly inflexible. It was like some kind of tarp that had been repurposed to straitjacket violent children. But luckily for me and Aunt Celia, I was also 8 years old, so utterly oblivious to the nuances of mermaid tail craftsmanship. And I was absolutely jumping for joy when she brought out that soft green condom. It was the exact same color as Ariel's tail, after all. And I'm absolutely shaking with anticipation when she fastens the single rope attached to the giant waist around my tiny Twinkie frame. I'm jumping up and down in my oceanic potato sack. I'm lying on the floor and wriggling alluringly for my aunt. I roll over and over on the castle floor, singing Part of Your World like some kind of supernatural gay lapdog. In other words, I feel utterly like myself. After the initial glow of the gift wears off, though, I realize I can improve on this spectacle. What good is a fish out of water, as Sebastian the Crab so famously asked? It was time to test the aquatic merits of this flaccid leg pouch. Back at my own family's home, a couple weeks later, I proudly display the tale to my little French village friends, all of whom laugh hysterically at it, at me, at the very concept of mermaid impersonation. But again, I'm an 8-year-old child, so I don't really get whether everyone is laughing with or at me, but I know that they're paying attention to me and this history-making moment, and that's really what matters. So
yes.
One day, I solemnly carry my tail out to the pool, and suddenly I realize the extent to which I'm playing God. I mean, I'm about to successfully swim as a different species. Sure, the tail needed a few improvements, but the evolutionary achievement it represented could change everything. To my considerable knowledge of mermaid history and anthropology at the time, no one had ever done this before. So, with what felt like the whole world watching, I dip my legs elegantly into the forest green garbage bag, fasten the waist securely, and step up to the side of the pool to begin my first swim as merman. And then, boom, suddenly I slam into the water, pushed by my maniacally laughing brother behind me. But I quickly find my footing, because we're in the shallow end to start, and set my eyes on the opposite end of the pool. It's time to start pumping. I start off strong and proud, flapping my young legs together. The rigid inflexibility of the material is somehow exacerbated by contact with water, and I start struggling to move my legs in the required unison. No. Now the water is getting deeper and deeper, and I'm swimming more like a demented seal than a beautiful mermaid. But then, an idea. If I can submerge myself fully and pump forward like the real merfolk could do, maybe the tail will magically follow suit. So I descend down, down into the azure depths, opening my eyes underwater and even considering trying to take a breath and see what happens. Before I can find out if the tail comes with working gills, though, I realize I'm running out of air. So I start kicking my way back up to the surface, and just as I'm about to emerge victorious with a big aerial-style hair flip, I feel a tug at my fins. And then a much stronger yank follows, and I turn underwater to see my nefarious brother grinning as he attempts to test my mer strength by introducing the element of drowning. Now I panic, fully out of air, and in a last desperate attempt, pump my legs up to reach the surface, which I do, gasping for air. But now my tiny, weary 8-year-old legs can't figure out how to tread water in the murderous cling film pulling me back down below. So I kick and kick, and now I am actually fully drowning between my psychotic shark brother nipping at my fins below and the French screams of spectators saying, "Swim, little mermaid, swim!" I begin to fear that my passion for science and interspecies cooperation might lead to an untimely death. Luckily, I rally and feel the strength of King Triton himself rush into my arms, which are my only working limbs at this point. I climb up and up through the water column, grasping and pulling and fighting for my life until I reach the edge of the pool. And when I am finally, mercifully evacuated by the emergency airlift of my dad's arms, I didn't curse my brother for attempting to murder me in our family home, which was admittedly a hilarious joke. No. I cursed the cheapness, the meanness, the thoughtlessness of my traitorous Aunt Celia, who refused to sew a functioning mermaid tail with the proper anti-drowning security features. So for the trivial crime of gifting me poor, dysfunctional merchandise, falsely advertised as a dream come true, I condemn my Aunt Celia before the judge in this very real court. Thank you very much.
I mean, first of all, I've got to commend you, because on your storytelling ability, because halfway through that I was like, fuck, did he drown? Even though I'm seeing him here on screen, I'm like still like, I'm still like the most logical thing to have happened here is your
he's dead.
Death.
Yeah. I agree.
Thank you. As the opposition lawyer, I thank you for telling me what a good lawyer I am.
Yeah. I don't think you've understood how this is supposed to work, Jack. But no, Sebastian, you very cleverly misled me briefly.
Thank you, Judge. Thank you.
In your story, because at one point I thought that the trivial criminal was going to be your shark brother.
Of course.
For trying to drown you. And I was itching to point out that attempted murder is, in fact, a real crime.
You think I didn't think about that? You think I didn't come into this ready for that?
Clearly.
I did my homework. I did my homework while I was high, and I'm high again. Bitch.
Well, I was thinking halfway through listening to it, as well as did Sebastian die, is that maybe this podcast has never been so relatable than listening to Sebastian complain about a slave of his sewing an outfit for him so that he can dress up as a mermaid while swimming in front of a horde of French peasant children in his castle's pool.
You're like one of those incompetent children from Succession.
I am incompetent because I couldn't get my employees to create the right tool. And I do blame myself in some ways. But also I blame Aunt Celia because she could have just invested some time. It also took her weeks. I was like, this is what you were working on for 2 weeks? Like, I spent 2 weeks in her castle waiting for my tale. And then it was just a bag. Like,
maybe she wanted you to die. It sounds to me like just how ungrateful you are to the act of kindness that she probably had reached her limit and she was like, is she French?
No, she's British.
Oh, right. So she was like, all right, governor, basically pop this bag over your head and go swimming in the fucking pool. It'll be absolutely brilliant. Yeah. It's exactly like a mermaid.
A really elaborate way of saying, why don't you go play in traffic?
Yeah. Also, can I just say, I cannot believe, you know, because we're listening to you, your dream of becoming a mermaid and singing the songs from The Little Mermaid and wanting to dress up as a mermaid in front of people. And I cannot believe you ever felt the need to come out to
like literally when my dad used to say, like, yeah, I knew you were gay from the, like, when you were 3 years old, and I was like,
yeah,
no you didn't, fucking bitch, you didn't know me. And also I did a great job pretending. And then it's like, and then I remember things like this and I'm like, good lord, like, they should have given me away. Like, it was almost a disability how gay I was. But I was also talking to some fellow gays in the community about how the pool as a child was a very safe queer space. Like, the pool is where I first, like, tried the hair flip, you know, the big, like, the hair coming out of the water. The pool is also where I sort of learn to walk while swaying my hips because they were underwater, so it was hidden from view. There was a lot of queer experimentation going on in that French pool. Also, I guess the time that I sucked that guy's dick.
Can we have some punishments, please?
Thank you, Your Honor. My punishment is quite simple, and I won't belabor I won't hammer down on the point style, but it's basically that they can never cut any hair on their body ever again.
Ooh, simple. I like simple.
They've got to let it go.
I like simple.
Yeah.
Anyone?
No sculpting, no shaping, nothing.
That's fine. That's a hazard.
What happens if, like, an angry toddler, like, tears a clump of hair out of, like, one of their heads?
I'm a reasonable guy. Death for both.
or okay, wait, let me bring my trademark Sebastian twist on this. What if it grows back?
Bash, can you bring your trademark twist on this, please?
just hold on a second. I'm working. So what if you rip it out? It's obviously extremely painful because ripping hair out is really painful. But then, like, when it grows back, it makes the sound of, like, nails on chalkboard. And it's just, like, a screeching pain or, like, styrofoam rubbing together. So they are actually disincentivized to lose hair. Like, they can't lose hair, but they're also emotionally going to be scared of it in a sort of terrifying Pavlovian way. Anyway, if that helps, I don't know.
Are they hallucinating this noise, or is the universe sort of spontaneously producing?
Do I have to deal with it?
Producing
that's noise? A good question. I think I'd want it to happen for everyone so that they were eventually spurned by their own loved ones and society and forced to retire to the wilderness and live together in a commune of hairy vagina people.
Wow.
Well, that's the name of the podcast.
Okay, before...
A commune of hairy vagina people.
Before this gets any further out of hand, thank you, Leonard Gansel, for your rapidly, you know, becoming more and more fucked up punishment.
Which has nothing to do with me.
Which is... Well, you started it. Sebastian, can we have your punishment, please?
I admit that in the past, I may have painted with a heavy brush stroke when designing my punishments. But this time, I think I've actually done a great job. Because, first of all, I think you need to understand that Aunt Celia doesn't speak to my family anymore for some ridiculous reason involving antiques and furniture or something. So I don't know where
she's... Trying to drown you and trying to fucking drown you as well. That right. Might be on your mum's mind.
Doubtful. Have you met Carla? I don't think that would have...
Very good point. She'd be much more concerned about the silver spoons.
So the point is, I don't really know where she's at these days, but I do want her to suffer very trivially for this crime of ending one of my childhood dreams and nearly my life. So I recommend that judge, you, Your Honor, sentence Celia to her own worst nightmare, which is a life of abject luxury in which she never has to make or fix anything for herself again. Her only true joy in this world, fashioning things with her own two hands, will be ripped from her life. She will move back to the castle. She will live with a staff of at least 30, and she will wither away, having never used her muscles again.
I think she's done you there, mate. Like, she's played you for a deck of cards. She's got everything she's ever wanted.
No, she doesn't want it. She doesn't want it. She wants to bake her own cakes with no flour or eggs or any food.
But I mean, she maybe, okay, A, you could look at that her being like, oh, she's really inventive, or she's just a terrible cook, and therefore it would be really good for her to have people cooking for her. And also, you say, oh, she loves making outfits. Sebastian, she had 2 weeks. She gave you a green bin bag.
She does love it. I didn't say she was good at it. And for the rest of her life, she will be neither good nor bad. She will be nothing. She will sink into nothingness. I think it's brilliant.
How old is she? Isn't she, like, old now?
She's definitely old, for sure. She must be, like, 70-something.
All right, let me deliberate. I think
I love watching you deliberate.
Yeah.
I think that the
where are your hands?
occupied. The problem, I think, with your punishment, Sebastian, is that functionally what you've said is that you will punish your aunt, who is, by her own admission, elderly, by having her cared for really well. So,
what a fucking punishment. It's so stupid.
You get it.
Your punishment could only, in the sort of aristocratic and perverse circles that you move in, be thought of as any sort of punishment. It's completely unpersuasive. So despite the fact that Jack's punishment rapidly devolved into some kind of nightmarish psychological warfare against his family and friends, I've got to give it to him.
I did that. I gave him that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you did that.
So yeah, so the only criticism that you could level against me was Sebastian's involvement.
Well, yeah.
My story.
Sort of. Yeah, well done.
Great.
I feel like nobody appreciates my creative. Like, it's not like, you know, it just doesn't feel like it used to in kindergarten when the teachers were like, wow, you're such a genius. Like, keep drawing those drawings of you murdering your family. Like, it doesn't feel like anyone's saying that to me anymore.
No, I got to say, this one was a real race to the fucking bottom. but Jack came out.
My story was excellent. Shit. My story was excellent.
Your punishment was terrible. Your punishment was so bad.
Your punishment is garbage. Much like the mermaid outfit that Aunt Celia made you.
Green
we
garbage.
Tie it together.
And that brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you for listening, dear listeners. I think I'm correct in saying that your enthusiasm in coming back is matched by our laziness in producing more episodes. We hope to improve that soon. In the meanwhile, share the episode with your friends. If you can, leave a review on wherever you find your podcasts. And follow us on Instagram at Butterflies Podcast.
Okay, I have to go. I actually have a job.
Okay, cool. Yeah. See you later, Bash. Love you.
See you later.
Bye. Love you. Bye.
Love you.